Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sarah Ibrahim.
On today's episode, I'm interviewing Devin Miller. Devin founded Miller IP Law to help startups and small businesses with patents, inventions, trademarks, brands, and copyrights. Devin founded his first startup while earning his law and MBA degrees. Since then, he's launched 7- and 8-figure startups. Devin enjoys every minute of helping startups and small businesses. Hey, Devin, welcome to our podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to interview you, get to know you a little bit more in your business. I know we're going to talk about some of the legal strategies behind protecting your business, especially as far as the intellectual property goes. I think that's going to be really interesting for the audience, especially considering a lot of the audience are small business owners. But before we jump into that, I want to know more about you and your background.
Yeah, that's a long conversation in and of itself. I could go on, and I'd probably be the only one that would find it interesting. So I'll try and keep it at a reasonable level, but kind of as a quick background on myself, a little bit first on the educational side. So I ended up getting 4 degrees, which my wife always jokes is 3 degrees too many. So as far as education wise, I got a undergraduate, I got an electrical engineering degree, as well as a Mandarin Chinese degree. And then for graduate school, I went off and I went and got dual degrees for the law degree, as well as an MBA degree. So that's kind of on the educational wise, kind of on the career path. So after I graduated from law, or I guess backing up a little bit, when I was coming out of undergraduate, I was trying to decide if I wanted to do more on the business side, kind of found startups and small businesses and all of that, all of that interesting. And I also found the legal aspect fairly interesting. And so with that, I ended up kind of going down both paths. And so over the course of my career, I've always been an intellectual property attorney for about 11 years. I've also done several startups and small businesses along the way as well, and kind of always tend to split my time or focus my attention on both aspects of it. So last thing, and then I'll pause there, is married for 16 years now. Cool. Have 4 kids, ages 7 to 12. They keep oldest is a son, and then 3 girls, so they keep me busy as well.
Oh, awesome. Very nice. That's great. And I could tell, like, you've done a lot of education. And I think you have to, right, to be a patent intellectual property attorney, you have to have an undergraduate degree in science or math, right?
Yeah, so you have to have a technical undergraduate. Usually it's in engineering. It can be physics, some sciences, so some biomedical or chemistry and some of those, but generally has to be a hard science. It's a requirement to do the patent side. When you're a patent attorney, as opposed to all other lawyers, we get to take 2 bar exams as opposed to 1. So normal, all lawyers have to take the bar exam for their state bar. If you want to be a patent attorney, you also have to take a patent bar, which is with the federal government. And in order to be eligible to take that exam, you have to have a technical undergraduate.
Got it. That makes sense. And are you able to practice on the intellectual property side? Are you able to practice law across the whole country?
I am. So as opposed to, you know, the typical attorney, if you're working, especially on the state law level, you're limited to your state that you have that you're licensed in, right? You took the bar in. With the patents and trademarks and copyrights, so really all of intellectual property, it's on the federal level. So given that it's on the federal level, we can do it in all 50 states. I have, you know, my firm has more clients out. I'm in Utah, and that's where I have a license in. We have more clients outside of Utah than inside of Utah, and it works out well. So, yeah, so we have clients not in all 50 states, pretty close. So it makes it nice that we can work with clients across the country.
And who are your typical clients?
Yeah, so kind of is the backstory to that. So when I started out in the legal career, I went and worked for a couple large law firms, including a top 100 law firm, worked for big clients, including Amazon and Intel and Red Hat, Ford and others. But really, after about 6 or so years into my career, I kind of stepped back and said, hey, what kind of clientele do I want to focus on? What do I want to be when I grow up, so to speak, and where do I want to head? And it was kind of, you know, as I took a step back, I said, you know, the clients that I generally like to work with, they're the startups and the small businesses, just because you can have more of an impact with them. You generally can, you know, give them more direction. There's more strategy, and, you know, it just is more fun to see kind of them getting started out. And so that's where I shifted, or I decided to take my career and started my own firm, Miller IP Law. And that's really where I focus on, and myself and the other attorneys here focus on helping startups and small businesses. So most of our clients are going to be the startup small businesses, everything from the person that has a great idea just getting started to the garage inventor to the, you know, the venture capital backed or, you know, startup or small business. We also have some medium sized clients as well. But by and large, we tend to focus on a lot of startups and small businesses. But really across the board, we have a lot of different types of clients, and they lot with a lot of different interesting inventions.
And as listening to this as a small business owner, I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, small business owner and then hiring an intellectual property attorney or a patent attorney, that I think that sounds like really expensive. You know, is that a common thing that small business owners think about when hiring an intellectual property attorney? Like, is it, it's going to be beyond their budget or beyond their needs?
Yeah, I mean, it is an investment. So, you know, on the honest answer is anytime you go to a lawyer, you're not going to, you're in for a bit of a bill. Now, yeah, we try and be, you know, competitive, be on the more affordable. We tried to set up the firm that it is a, you know, as patents and trademarks and that go, it's more economical, more feasible, and more approachable as a startup or a small business. But you do have to look at it as an investment. And so you're looking at it and kind of as it sounds, intellectual property is just that, it's property that's intellectual. So as you think of as opposed to real property, so you can own a house, you can own a car, you can own other things. Intellectual property is gives you ability to have as an asset or property your invention. How do you protect all the time, money, blood, sweat, and tears that goes into that, or your brand for your business, or those type of things. And so it is an asset, but in order to acquire that asset or in order to be able to own it, you do have to invest in it. And so, you know, you take the average patent over the course of getting a patent, you're usually an investment of, you know, 10 to 12,000, not mm-hmm. all of that's upfront, but it is spread over the course of about a year and a half to 2 years. If you're to look at a trademark application or to get a trademark, you're usually on the lines of, you know, 1500 to 2000. So you're saying, okay, you know, now you're going to have to weigh against the business. And is that a asset and that's something you want to invest in? Does it make sense? If it does, then, you know, it's worthwhile. And if not, then you don't have, you know, there isn't any requirement that you have to have one in order to be in business.
Got it. That makes sense. And then for on the patent side, when you go through the process, it's not guaranteed that you end up with the patent, right? It has to be approved ultimately by the US PTO.
Yeah, so I mean, technically, you can file a patent on just about anything you want. You could go and you could file a patent on your iPhone, and now you're not going to get a patent. Apple already has a whole bunch on there, yeah. But they don't have any gating requirements of what you can file them on. So in other words, you can file on just about anything. Now, doesn't mean you're going to get them. And to your point, when you're looking at whether or not you can get a patent, there are really kind of a couple standards for patentability. So one is called novelty, and the other one's called obviousness. So novelty basically means, hey, has anybody else previously invented this? Somebody's already invented it. You can't get a patent on something that's already been invented. Obviousness basically means is, okay, well, not one person invented it, but if you're to take two or more things that are already on the marketplace, all you're really doing is putting those together in an obvious way, really not adding anything new or unique or innovative. So then again, it wouldn't be patentable. So when you file a patent application, you're really going to go through, they're going to examine it for those two standards. Anybody else previously invented this? Is it an obvious combination of what's out there? If you meet those couple standards, then you're able to get a patent on it. Vice versa, if you don't meet either one of those two standards, then it won't be eligible for patentability.
Got it. And this might be a kind of an obvious question, but I'd like your, you know, your answer on this. Like, what are the advantages of getting a patent, of getting a trademark, of copywriting? What's like kind of the point of doing that for the business owner?
Yeah, there's usually a couple, and you know each thing there protects something a bit different. So just as a quick level set, when you're looking at intellectual property, patents are going to protect inventions. Trademarks are going to protect the brand, so name of a company, catchphrase, logo, those type of things. And or copyrights are going to protect creative, so a picture, a sculpture, a painting, a video, those type of things are falling under copyrights. But at the heart, there are really two reasons why you're going to invest in intellectual property. One is because it's, you know, you're wanting to protect what you're going to put it, or your time, money, and effort into invent or to working towards. So you're creating an invent or an invention, and you want to be, you know, the next best iPhone out there. Then you're going to want to put in, it's going to take a lot of research, development, time, money, and effort to develop it. And how do you capture that, or how do you protect it, that once you put all that time, money, and effort in, that somebody isn't just going to say, hey, that's a great invention, and come and knock it off. It's kind of like the magic trick. Once you know how it's done, it's a lot easier to do it. And so that's a lot of times with inventions. And so, you know, intellectual property on the patent side helps you to protect that once you have this invention, it gives you an exclusivity for 20 years that, you know, that you have the invention and other people can't go out and manufacture or make it or otherwise bring that or put that in the marketplace for what's covered under your patent. Similar with a trademark. Now, if you're looking at a brand, you know, now let's say you're going to go out and you're going to create the next, whether it's Disney or Marvel or M&M's or Pepsi or Coke or, you know, choose whichever brand you like, Apple or Nike or Adidas, all of those are very strong brands and they have a lot of customers, you know, are with that. And so with that, you're saying, how do I, you know, if I go out and put in a whole lot of time and effort to create a brand, how do I stop somebody else from coming along and just riding my coattails using the same brand or a very similar brand and leveraging what I've put in all that time, money, and effort in? Well, that's what you do under trademarks. And so there's kind of that defensive nature of, hey, if I'm going to put in investment, time, money, and effort, I want to be able to defend what I'm investing in. The other one is kind of more of an asset. So it's actually something that's investable that you can actually, you know, have as an asset of the business. And so if you're to look at, you know, really as an example, you know, if you want to go out and you want to go get or go pitch your business to investors. One of the things they're going to say is, okay, that's a great, maybe, hopefully they say that's a great idea. Now, how do you protect it? And they say, well, I have this intellectual property, and then they can actually invest in it. So part of their investment is secured against that, you know, the investment in that patent or that trademark. Same thing, you can license it. You can license it out to others. So you take a Disney or a Marvel, they do a ton of licensing with all of their branding and all of their different assets. That's all their trademarks, or a lot of their trademarks. You can also, you know, if you're gonna at some point you're gonna sell off your company and you're a target for acquisition, then you're gonna want to have assets that are gonna be, what is the value of your business? Well, part of how you capture that is with your intellectual property. So really, one is kind of giving you a defensive position to stop others from copying what you're going to be doing or what you're building, and then the other one is it's going to also provide that asset that you can otherwise have as part of the business.
Got it. And if somebody does, like for example, like infringe on your ideas or your intellectual property, then obviously, like you would sue them then, right? There would be litigation involved.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how or kind of, you know, what the circumstances are. At the end of the day, you know, it can involve litigation. A lot of times, you know, people are always say, hey, I've been wronged and I want to go into litigation. And then they find out how expensive, you know, attorneys and litigation are. And then they decide to go a different path. But, you know, usually you take it stepwise. It can be everything from, hey, you know, maybe the other party wasn't aware that you had intellectual property, you had a patent or a trademark on this, and it was an innocent mistake type of a thing. And in that case, you know, you can send out a cease and desist letter, or you can, and they may stop. It may also be that, you know, you offer it to license and say, hey, we own this intellectual property. While we could go out and we could, you know, enforce this against you, we'd rather you just take a license, pay us for what we've created and what's or what we own, and then you can be out in the marketplace to compete alongside of us. Or, you know, sometimes you're also saying, hey, we just don't have the budget or the ability to go out and enforce our intellectual property. But we, you know, there every big company has a competitor. So Nike has Adidas, Apple has Samsung. And so sometimes you're saying, hey, you know, I'm not able, if Apple goes and rips off my patent, I'm just not going to be able to go and enforce it against them. I just don't have that funds. But, you know, Samsung is, it does have those funds. And they, if this is valuable, something that Apple's going to knock off, then you may go and approach a competitor and say, hey, I've got this valuable intellectual property. Do you want to partner up? Do you want to acquire it? Do you want to license it or otherwise take advantage of it? And then they will have that in their arsenal and be able to go out and enforce it. So there's kind of different options, but at the end of the day, if you have the situation where you're needing to enforce your intellectual property, then you pursue one or more of those routes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, for sure. That definitely makes a lot of sense. If you're listening to this podcast now and you're in the process of like hiring an intellectual property attorney to fill out a patent application or a trademark application, what are some things you should like what are some things the client should know before proceeding with the law firm? Like, what are some key things that are be really important to understand about this process?
Yeah, I would say one is make sure you're actually talking to the attorney that you're going to be working with. So, I mean, and not in a bad way, but a lot of times you'll have an intake attorney or someone else that you're going to have the initial consultation with, and then it gets passed off to an associate or to a, you know, another attorney. That's not bad. If there's a different attorney that matches up better, by all means, get the most qualified one, but at least make sure you're understanding who you're going to be working with. And then probably the biggest thing is when you talk with them, when you interact with them, make sure you actually understand what they're telling you. Attorneys are really bad about using legalese and making things very complex. And there's a lot of nuance and a lot of complexity, but they should be able to simplify it or break it down or otherwise explain it into a level that at least you're walking away and at a basic level, you're understanding it, you're knowing what you're doing, why you're doing it, what it's going to cost, and what the process is. And even if you don't know all the legal aspects behind it, you're having a good understanding. And you know, the worst thing is if you go into an attorney and you say, well, they told me it's going to cost me this much, and I have no idea what's going to go, but hopefully it goes well. That's, you know, that's not a, or typically a good situation. And so if you can walk away and at least say, okay, I understand what the, or what the general, what a trademark is and kind of what the process is and how, you know, how much it's going to cost me and why I need it, then that's a, usually the indication that you've got a better attorney or a better law firm.
Got it. That makes sense. And are the fees typically due all up front, or is it like broken down over like stages?
It will vary depending on law firms. So most of ours are typically due up front. And the reason is we're not in the business of wanting to go into collections or having to be a collection agency. We just want to get that paid for, do a great job, get it filed, and otherwise represent you. You know, other law firms will, they'll charge you on an hourly basis. So you'll get a retainer and they'll bill against it. I personally, if I was a startup or small business, I wouldn't like a retainer just because it kind of feels like it's more of an open-ended check where, you
Sure.
know, things always tend to be more costly and more expensive than what you think they're going to be, or the attorney runs up the bill or anything of that, and you never know what it's going to cost you. So I'm generally more of a proponent of a flat fee.
Yeah.
Simply know, hey, for this, you know, for this phase or for this matter, this item, this is what it's going to cost. And you know, and then you pay that up front, it's taken care of, and then there isn't that friction of whether or not the attorney's going to get paid or whether or not they're going to charge you too much. But every firm does vary a bit different depending on how they want to set it up.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I like more like from my standpoint, I like more like fixed pricing. It's just easier to comprehend, it's easier to understand, it's easier to budget for. But if it's an open-ended, retainer hourly rate, it could be 1,000, it could be 5,000, it could be 15,000. It kind of depends on what's happening in the background. So yeah, definitely agree. Last question, how can the listeners connect with you and learn more about you?
Yeah, so if they want to connect, there's a few different ways. So it depends on how they, what they want to connect with. So if they want to, we offer free 15-minute consultations. It's not going to answer every question you ever have, but it's going to give you a good idea of some strategy and what you want to consider and what you might be looking at. So to do a to schedule a free consultation, just go to strategymeeting.com. And you can just grab some time on an online schedule or connect right to my calendar. If they want to connect with me on socials, the one I'm generally the most active on is LinkedIn. And so they can just go to meetmiller.com and that will just direct right to my LinkedIn profile. And the last one, if they just want to learn more about the law firm, what our flat fees are, we have a ton of information, a lot of materials. We have podcasts and all those different things. They can also go to lawwithmiller.com and connect with me there. So real quick summary. Strategy or consultation, just go to strategymeeting.com to connect up with me on LinkedIn. Go to meetmiller.com, and for the website, just go to lawwithmiller.com.
Awesome, Devin. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure interviewing you and getting to know you. And I'm looking forward to having you back on the podcast.
Thank you for having me on, and had a fun time being here.
Thanks.
To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's FIN asset protection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.